The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Thursday, September 11th, 2008. We notice we're a day early this week. This is episode number 145, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, talking about MotoGP. We got a call today with Jules and Jim Race, so both Jules Cisek and Jim Race, a three-way call that we had going on with myself and Jules and Jim. Talking about a little bit about World Superbike last week at Donington, and also some pre-race indie stuff, and just a little, you know, all over the map as usual, especially when you got three people involved all talking about the sport that they love. So we're going to get to that here in just one second. Let's see, other stuff we got going on. I've been, as usual, been having a lot of good email this week. I hope I managed to reply to them all. I really do try to do that. And let's see, one story that I want to mention. I'm recording this a little earlier in the week than I normally do, so you're probably going to be missing out on some last-minute news sort of things, but I'm going to be traveling to Indy here shortly. That's why the show is a day early. That's why I'm recording the show fairly early. So there's not a lot of the last-minute news. One thing I want to mention, and this is a little bit like news fluff or fluff news, as you will, but I thought this one was pretty cool. And this was on MotoGP.com, the official website, sent it out in their press release and all that business. Indianapolis street signs honor MotoGP stars. A collection of street signs have been erected in downtown Indianapolis to honor America's MotoGP world champions and the current American riders in MotoGP. So basically, they changed a bunch of names of the streets. Street signs feature the names and race numbers of following American riders in various colors: Colin Edwards, Nicky Hayden, John Hopkins, Eddie Lawson, Wayne Rainey, Kenny Roberts Jr., Kevin Schwantz, Freddie Spencer, and Ben Spies, and Italian MotoGP star Valentino Rossi and reigning world champion Casey Stoner are also have been acknowledged with their own signs. So if you can get one of those signs when you go to Indy, you take a wrench, because you're going to want one of those, because that's a kind of a cool, cool thing. And actually, I think this is, to me, and we're going to talk about this in the call a little bit, one of the things I'm looking forward to about Indianapolis. I'm not so much looking forward to Indianapolis, the track, because let's face it, it's an inside oval. They generally suck. But, you know, I think they've done a good job of trying to make a good circuit on the inside oval. They have a lot of room to work with. It'll be a fairly interesting circuit. But more importantly, from my point of view, is the whole overall event. These people have been doing it a very, very long time, and they know how to put on a show. And like I said, we talk about that in the call a little bit, but I am very, very much looking forward to it. And I suppose maybe it's an American thing. I'm not sure. But Indianapolis is, to me, it's somewhat special. You know, this is pretty much the home of American motorsport. They've been doing it for a very long time. You know, granted, I think oval racing is pretty darn boring, but they put on, you know, a lot of events. They've had Formula One there, all sorts of different things, and they're not afraid to try something different. So kind of looking forward to it, and we'll see how it turns out. And of course, we're going to talk a lot about it next week on our post-Indy show, and we'll let you know how it went, how the first MotoGP race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, how that went. So let's see, without any further ado, because I think that about covers it, why don't we go ahead and get on with this conference call with myself, Jim Race, and Jules Cisek. All right, we got a conference call going. Got Jules Cisek and Jim Race. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
So who should talk first? So this is kind of a pre-Indy show. We're going to talk a little bit about Indy and stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about World Superbikes last weekend. We're just going to talk and kind of see how things go. So
before we get into those things, I wanted to provide an errata to our last show, episode 144. I said something. I said there that on the first lap at the race of Misano, Stoner was faster than like Anthony West. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wrong. He was actually in Brno. He was faster than Colin Pedrosa and a couple other riders on the first lap. He was fast. He set a faster time on the first lap, including the start, than they set throughout the race. But anyway, so it was a Brno, not Misano.
Oh, well, 6-1 happened to the other. I thought you were going to say, I want to start off with some erotica. And I thought, this is going to be a cool show.
It's a new show.
MotoGP-O-D-X.
Yes. We haven't done a conference call in a super long time, so we're probably going to be stepping all over each other, but we'll just play it by ear. So we had the World Superbikes. How about them World Superbikes? I've only seen race one. Go ahead and, you know, don't worry about spoiling race two for me or anything, but just know that I can't jump in with a whole lot of anything on race two there, Jules.
It was madness.
It was.
Both races had a lot of fallers. I mean, I think half the field finished in both races, less than half.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, race one, they had a grid, 33-rider grid, and I know that, yeah,
only 14 at least riders finished.
The interesting thing, though, about that race and actually the whole weekend was I was looking at Clinico Mobile today, and there were no serious injuries, which is
good,
pretty
deal.
Cool. Pretty cool when you're considering a track. You know, Donington's not like some of the British tracks. You know, try that at Cadwell Park, and you'd be in all sorts of trouble. But, everybody was pretty safe, and that was actually really nice to see considering all the people were going down.
Yeah, and race one, it was weird because they were going off in the same corner. It looked like there was oil, and then Haga had that moment where his engine blew up, and he was just riding around, which was kind of uncool, I thought.
I had to figure on that one that he didn't realize for a long time.
He was looking back behind himself and seeing.
Once he started looking back behind himself, yes, then he should have been. But it looked like once he started looking back behind himself that he was getting offline.
Not really.
He was still on the track.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
The bottom line is when you got smoke coming out, you have to get off the course. It reminded me a lot, actually, of Laguna Seca MotoGP in 2006 when Rossi's engine blew and.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
And I was corner working that race, and I was actually on comm at the same time. And across the corner worker network, you know, the radio chatter was incessant. It's like, why is he not getting off the track?
Right. He actually went all the way around.
Yes, he did.
And then he only stopped and turned after turn two. So he blew up basically on the straight, went all the way around, and then stopped on turn two. So more than a lap.
Wow.
And you know, you got to love Haga-san and everything. And, you know, the guy certainly rips. And I'm sure it was a brain fart. It wasn't like he was trying to stay in the race or get back into the race. But there is something that just kind of makes you go, well, what the hell?
Yeah. It's
right,
almost like
right.
You didn't
what
feel like walking.
Yeah. Wow. But, yeah, did you see was it Tomata's crash? Was like horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't get hurt in that, but you watch the bike tumble like that and the parts go flying. And I forget, it was Checa that came in right after him, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's huge chunks of parts and everything out there. And there was, you know, if you watch the entire sequence and actually some of the post-race action, they had a lot of footage of the corner workers out there, you know, throwing down oil dry and whatnot.
Yep.
In a whole bunch of different places. And I was wondering how much of that was due to Haga and how much of it might have been due to something else. But, race one was a bit of a fest. And you guys know that I did I'm sure everybody does, but I did the Laverty interview last week, and he actually had a pretty successful weekend as well in Supersport.
I did not watch the Supersport race.
No, have not either. Hasn't been on speed. Yeah.
I will probably be on speed. My guess is Tuesday.
I think it's on Tuesday, yeah.
February something 2009?
No, that's just mean.
Something to watch over winter right after Deutsche Touringcars, yes. No, it's on Tuesday. They've got a whole bunch of stuff going on Tuesday. I'm not sure what the hell's going on with speed. Like their MotoGP schedule, which, by the way, I want to mention this before we get too far in. I forget about it. The MotoGP is on NBC this weekend. The Indy race will not be on speed. It's on NBC.
Yes, 3 p.m. Eastern.
Live, at least.
Live.
Right. And they, you know, and so out of the last, four races, and then now with Indy it'll be five in a row, that Speed has had one MotoGP race that they've broadcast. So when Misano was on at 8 p.m. Pacific, that's 11 o'clock at night Eastern. It's like, and then they wonder why nobody watches it.
Hello.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So whatever, let's not go down that road. The other crash at World Superbike was when Haslam and come on, help me out here.
Color was the bike, Bob?
Well, the rider's helmet was white. Was it Rolfo? Haslam and Rolfo?
I'm going to plead ignorance myself.
Yeah, because
in race one.
There were so many crashes.
Yeah, it was insane. And I wish I could remember now. I feel kind of silly. I think it was Rolfo. And he tries to come up the inside, goes down, takes Haslam out with him, and Haslam's bike hits him in the head.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I can't believe there was no injury at all from that one. And it looked like Haslam was going to kick the crap out of him when he jumped up. he gets up and he got his bike, and I think he sort of got back on track, and then it got red flagged. It was a mishmash. That whole first race, like I said, I was on the edge of my seat.
It kind of reminded me of that race that, it's a very famous race when Colin Edwards was – in Superbikes 2002, I think, or 2001 maybe, and everybody was crashing, and it was and they refused to stop it. Was it at Nürburgring?
Nürburgring, yeah. The turn one incident, which is a different turn one that they had.
That was 99. Right.
The famous oil dealing, and that was the one where Colin flipped the bird to the camera and the corner workers and everybody else.
Right. The medic guy that came over to me was like, I don't need a medic. Somebody go out there and take care of that oil.
Yeah.
Well, Donington is notoriously slippery anyway, so we can't blame it all on Hogg or anything, but there's, you know, the conditions were such crap all weekend long that, I mean, there was riders going down like nine pins, you know, well before Hogg's engine blew up. But the whole race was a bit of a mess. The hero of the weekend was Sykes. I mean,
I knew he was going to charge through his Brands race. You know, he got six in race two there. I've been paying way more attention this year to BSB. And so, you know, naturally following along with any of the guys that are going and running in World Superbike. And if you've never seen BSB from Cadwell Park, I highly suggest that you guys watch it. Just get it from your usual joint. Just an awesome, it's just a neat little track. But he had six in race two at Brands, and a lot of people were like, the English guys are not going to do so well simply because once the Superbike boys get up to speed, they're going to decimate him. But I knew straight up that he was going to do well this weekend. And it was great to see him there.
Yeah, yeah. And if it hadn't been the red flag and the aggregate race, which I hate an aggregate race, all of that business, you know, he probably would have won it. Well, if it hadn't been red flagged the first time, he definitely would have won it. He had a huge lead. Yes.
Well, and the primary reason that he probably didn't win it even on aggregate was, and he said straight up at the end, was because the flags are different for World Superbike than they are for.
Oh, that's right. That was a really weird incident. Can you explain that exactly, Jim?
Sure. The flag for BSB for ambulance on course is a white flag with a diagonal red stripe, I believe. And for a World Superbike, that indicates that there is either debris, I'm guessing debris or oil or water on the course. And it's just a slowdown flag. It doesn't mean, you know, back way off. And both he and I think there were a couple other Superbike.
Yeah, Haslam did it.
They all backed off and Bayless cleared out.
Right. That's right. It took them
a few seconds to figure out, you know, that they better start cooking again, and by then it was too late.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
and I saw that, and Bayless just flew past Sykes. And if I recall correctly, that was the one where the announcers, it must have been looking at the timing and scoring and their notes and the lunch menu, because they're just going on and on and on for about five turns. Nobody says anything. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, wow, you just turn around and Bayless gets past Sykes. It's like, yeah, it was half a lap ago.
Did you watch that on Speed Bump?
Yeah.
But who are
Jonathan Green and.
Okay, so
Yeah, because we had Eurosport had Neil Hodgson in there, which was kind of fun.
Oh wow!
And of course, the always entertaining Jamie Witham. I love listening to him do the announcing. He rocks.
Yeah, he's okay.
I'll have to see if I can find that one.
Anyway,
in any case, there was some good World Superbike action, and they've still got three races to go or three weekends to go in their series. Including, some Vallelunga and Portimao and all these tracks that we don't see very often we don't see at all in MotoGP. So,
but it's important to note that the only people who really had like a realistic chance of catching Bayless all crashed in race one, and I think half of them crashed in race two also. Haga certainly didn't finish. Of course, did okay, but he's not really a contender anymore. And Neukirchner fell in race one. Checa fell in race one. Checa did not do so well in race two either. I think he fell, didn't he? No, that was his brother that fell.
Well,
it was just a mess. There was so many falls. All I remember was that incredible ride by Cainari in race two.
One of the things that you need to remember about race two was, I believe it was on the first lap.
Held their hands out?
Yeah, everybody, or at least all the top World Superbike guys were all got their hands up saying, hey, this is unrideable. And at the same time, the BSV regulars are like, well, hell with you. This is Donington. We race in the rain all the time.
This is as good as it gets.
I think Corser and Biaggi definitely had their hands up. And I think that anybody who was in the spray was like kind of overwhelmed by just how much spray there was. But the guys in front were like, hey, I don't want any spray. Let's go.
Yeah, I'll have to watch race two. That sounds like a good one as well. So race one was Bayless, Sykes, and then Biaggi, in a strange, Chaus had crossed the finish line first, but I still don't know exactly why Biaggi ended up, because on aggregate time he should have finished fourth, but whatever, he finished third.
I think they penalized Chaus, didn't they?
Was that what it was? It was a penalty?
Yeah, I think all I know is that Chaus was like 8 seconds ahead on aggregate. And the next thing I know, the results are Biaggi way ahead of Chaus.
Must have been a penalty of some kind. Yeah, and I didn't read the news because I was sort of avoiding the website, thinking I could not spoil the race, not thinking that I was going to be doing this call. But so in any case, race one, Bayless, Sykes, and good old Max Biaggi. So how did race two finish up? Do you guys know?
We had Cainari, who was unbelievable.
Different planet.
Obviously a wet planet. he was riding in the wet the way, like MotoGP guys like a couple of years ago when there was not really a traction control, they had oodles of power, were riding in the dry. It was just unbelievable, just backing it in, and he just did not care. Puddles. I mean, it was really pouring.
That sounds like that's going to be a good race to watch.
It was amazing watching him. And, Bayless actually was leading and then crashed.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's a keeper. So you had, excuse me, my voice is a little bit tweaked here. I unfortunately think that I've had a bit of a cold the last few days, but it will be gone by Andy.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Drink some beer, you'll feel better.
Why? I'm trying that remedy as we speak. Cainari, Crutchlow, yet another BSB guy. Corser in third, so that was your podium. Ellison of former Ilmor fame and other various MotoGP teams, as well as current rider in BSB, who really hasn't had a whole lot of a standout year in BSB. Fabrizio, who was kind of a surprise. Didn't he win like the first race of the year, I think?
In Qatar?
I believe he won one of the first two races.
Wow.
Biaggi 6, Gregorio Lavia, who there's a name from the blast from the past. Chaus got a little bit of redemption in 8th, Checa in 9th, and Sykes in 10th. So, real surprising. There was a drag only being able to see the highlight reels, because clearly that was going to be a race to watch. So,
yeah, well, it will be on eventually on Speed, that's where I'll end up watching it. While we're talking about races this past weekend and penalties and controversy and weirdness, I know you guys aren't huge Formula One fans, but did you catch Spa last weekend?
No, I just watch it and see if my boy is does well, and if he doesn't, then I don't really care.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't do well.
But he's third in the championship.
What's that?
He's third in the championship, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, yeah. He actually, yeah, and he passed Raikkonen so bumped Raikkonen down to fourth in the championship. I do remember that. Because Raikkonen, it was a good race, Jim. This one was good. I did sleep through the middle.
You're always sleeping through these races, Bob. It's like a basketball match. You know, like, let's look up at the end. Like, you watch it in the beginning because the first corner is always interesting. And then you sleep for an hour and a half.
Yep.
And then you watch the last half.
And you wake up for the last few laps. It's a great way to spend a Sunday afternoon. Come on. And, you know, I try to make it to the first series of pit stops, which I don't believe I actually did at Spa. But, no, I mean, the last three laps of that race, you guys have to see. It was literally on your feet. Oh, my God. And you couldn't believe it was Formula One. And if you haven't seen it, on the last two laps, Nick Heidfeld passed – on the last lap, I think it was, whatever it was, he passed four guys in one lap, which, okay, that's never happens in Formula One. I thought I was watching a motorcycle race. So it was good. And then they penalized the winner and said, you haven't won, and juggled around all the results. And when you want to talk about big conspiracy theories, the FIA has it out for McLaren, apparently. So whatever.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw something about FIA hates McLaren on a motorcycle board today, no less. So I was... I didn't open the topic yet because it's really not my area of expertise. But
that one has a lot of ground, because I on my last call, which I don't know if you heard, Jim, or not, but I just threw out the idea that Dorna told Stoner to crash.
Oh yes, right? No. I specifically hadn't listened to the call, but then Jules emails between the three of us, and I'm like, okay, I gotta go watch that.
Right. Now I recall these emails, and I mean, like I said, it was just me talking smack. You know, the thing is I am cynical enough and to believe that it's possible, but I don't actually think that it does happen, and I also don't want to think about it too much because I don't want to spoil my enjoyment of MotoGP. But you know, this theory on the Formula One side, this has a lot of legs. There's people that think that, you know, Max Mosley and whoever the hell else or whatever, that they have it out for McLaren and that they will do whatever it takes to make sure that McLaren doesn't win. And we just can only hope that that doesn't happen to our precious MotoGP.
You know, you think you were getting letters for that, emails from that last week? Wait until we just did 5 minutes of F1 on MotoGP.
Share the wealth. You got to share the wealth. Formula One blog, which is an excellent podcast. They do a lot about MotoGP, and they beat me to the punch always because their show comes out on Monday. You know, MotoGP doesn't come till Friday, so half the time Grace is stealing my thunder anyway. So there you go.
But on the other hand, see that we get all the last minute dirt.
So, that's true.
And now you're totally screwing her up because you're doing it on a Monday night yourself.
That's true, but it won't go up until I don't know when. Tuesday or Wednesday.
Hopefully before we leave for Indy.
Exactly. Oh yeah, it'll have to go up Tuesday night. Yeah, because I'm leaving Wednesday night. I'm not gonna, whatever. Okay, now we're getting behind the scenes stuff. Let's move on. Let's talk about Indy.
You know what? Oh, real quick, I do want to talk about Laverty because he took the time to speak with us.
Yes.
I believe he was gridded up 17th or maybe even further back. And they had a real mix-up, both he and Brock Parks, on the Yamaha World Supersport team. In fact, Laverty, maybe even as far back as 23rd, 24th, I'm not sure, but it was really not the grid they wanted. It was spitting rain during qualifying, and they just could not get the proper tire on. But in the end, the boy came through and finished in eighth, and that's a fantastic start. And the team apparently was quite happy with his performance, and he'll be back at Vallelunga. And as well, I'll have the opportunity to interview him at Indy because, as I mentioned last week,
yeah,
he's also running the 250s at Indy. So it's a really weird back and forth mix, but we'll be able to get a nice clean connection this time because I'll have my James Bondian recording device. So that'll be cool. So good on you, Eugene. Nice work, and thanks Pippa and Vezzy for hooking it up.
Sweet.
Yeah. I thought it was a great call. I liked it. I mean, it was, you know, between Eugene's accent and a little bit of the call quality going on, you know, he sort of had to, well, what did he say? But no, it was still really, really good stuff. And he seems like a super fun guy, like that YouTube link with the leathers. It's like, oh, come on. You know, brilliant. All of that. But he's a neat guy, and we do hear his name a lot. And it's going to be great to see the 250s out there at Indy.
Absolutely. So now we're on Indy. Oh, and I should point out so that everybody understands, and you mentioned inside things, one of the reasons that all three of us are on here talking right now is simply because all three of us are going to be going into Indy this week.
Yes, exactly so. And been kicking around various ideas of what we can do to sort of say hello to people that want to say hello and all that sort of thing, which, you know, nothing like leaving it to the last minute.
All 150,000 of you.
What's that?
All 150,000 of you.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we're going to, you know, take a parade lap. Ride us around in a Corvette convertible and we'll wave. And
hopefully wearing our bulletproof vests.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes. So, but no, I'll be wearing a MotoGPOD shirt, so you'll see me.
I'm going to proudly wear the Ride On 2 shirt that Jules made for me in 2006 that I never wore and he wanted to kill me.
Cool. Excellent. Okay, so we were talking about an email. We were talking about where we were going to try and meet.
Eat, meet, and greet. For those of you, and Bob, you can put up a link to the map for this. There is a track map of Indy, and I've kind of got it narrowed down to just the track from the outside of the oval to the inside. And what we're looking to do is you'll see just across from basically the center of the front straight, there is a tunnel that goes across prior to where the start-finish line will be for this race, the same direction they normally take for Indy cars. And it's labeled as a 3. If you go up about 100 yards, and I'm guessing because I haven't been there before, the media center is shown on this map. And right above that are a dollar sign for an ATM and a green medical sign for medical area. And so basically what we're going to do is we'll be down there outside of the media center. We thought that was kind of appropriate.
Yeah, we'll sneak over there in our gorilla media suits. Yes.
It made me laugh. And so we'll be wearing, and this is Saturday between, I believe, Jules, correct me if I'm wrong, I said 11:15 to 12:15. Is that correct?
I think it's at 12:15 to 1:15, but let me check.
12:15 to 1:15, yeah. 12, it is 12:15.
12:15 to 1:15, okay.
Great.
Right, because that's lunchtime.
And if so, if you guys want to come over, all you listeners, both MotoGPOD and Ride On 2, it's going to be kind of a combined gig. I'm tall, skinny, gray hair, slight California tan.
We can post a photo of all the three of us from a couple of years ago.
That would help.
Yeah, but we don't all look like that anymore.
I'm tall, blonde, strikingly handsome. Yes, but... I'll be wearing a MotoGPOD shirt.
Jules no longer looks like a homeless person, I hear, so.
You'll be surprised, actually.
Okay.
Just you wait.
Back in startup mode, you're going to. Anyway, so we'll be there, and if you can work your way through the throngs to actually meet us and give us those cash donations you've been promising.
And if you don't, we'll get you in the tunnel.
So, yeah, so that Saturday at 12:15, roughly outside the media center, which one of Jim's emails said something about Myers Drive, which they actually have street names inside Indy.
Indeed.
Myers Drive and 6th Street. It's in the infield at the corner of Myers Drive and 6th Street.
And we'll be on the – if you're looking at the front straight from the grandstands, we'll probably be in the, let's say, southwest corner.
Okay. Which at 12:15, the sun will be directly overhead, so good luck figuring out where south is. And they also, for those of you that don't know which direction they run the Indy cars, they go counterclockwise at Indy, and so are the motorcycles this weekend going counterclockwise. So.
And I'll point out, too, that if you need to have updated information on where we'll be in case something like that doesn't work out, I will have net access, I'm sure Jules and Bob probably will, too, as too. And I'll make sure that we keep that information updated in probably the Indy meetup topic or whatever I choose to open at rideon2.com. So drop in the forums and check it out.
Be a hot topic on rideon2.com on like the front page. It'll show the latest forum topics and stuff, and we'll make sure that it moves up to the top, right, Jim?
Absolutely.
Which reminds me, I got to put my tips in. So
that's right.
Little reminder, RDP crash first. It's the safe bet. I mean, I hate to jinx
that. Come on. Dorna is going to make sure that Stoner crashes, right? So,
but he won't crash first. Apparently, they make sure that RDP crashes first so they can get a few chest shots. Then Stoner will crash. So
we're really bad people. You know that.
I know this call's like all over the map and it's terrible and stuff, but that's okay.
I'm going to burn in French hell.
Yes. What else we got besides the 125s? Actually, looking hell. At that.
Oh, sorry.
So just a quick rundown for the weekend. There are obviously multiple classes running the first time that the two strokes have been back in the States. But not just the 125s and 250s. And when I say first time they've been back, first time since 1994 at Laguna Seca. We do have the 125 GP 125 and 250s and all the associated folks with those classes, but we also have a bit of a special treat this weekend, which I'm really looking forward to. Looking forward to maybe as much as anything, which is the Red Bull Rookies Cup Challenge. And that's going to be cool because that is the top 10 European riders up against the top 10 American riders in the Red Bull Rookies Cup. And no, Red Bull is not paying for any of this, by the way. But
they're bringing. I didn't know they're bringing the European kids over too. That's awesome.
Right. No, I'm just saying they're not paying me for any of these particular.
Right. No. No. But yeah. But I mean, no. I mean, they are bringing the European kids over and as well because we've had the Red Bull U.S. Rookies Cup, which you know, Jules, we saw at Laguna Seca, and I mean that was some good racing. And then unfortunately we had that tragedy with Toriano Williams. Yeah. And that was bad news. But they're bringing over the European guys as well, huh?
Indeed. And what the plan is the Cup Challenge will be to race, and I may have some of the rules slightly skewed here, and somebody might skewer me for that, but essentially what they do is they run this race, something along the lines of the top 10 or the top 10 finishers total. You're going to take the points from those. They're going to do another race at Valencia at the end of the year. And do the same type of point structure, and whichever team has the most number of points is going to get the Rookies Cup Challenge trophy and get to hang on to that until next year. So it's a big bragging rights thing, and you might go, ah, well, whatever, you know, but to kids on a world stage like this, it's amazing. The only thing I'd really ask for, and I actually, this is one of the things that I talked with Gavin Emmett about, is that to get the damn thing televised. It should be a great
race. They did do some coverage of the Laguna Seca race somewhere. Like they kind of chunked it into the Super Sport race or something. Real brief highlights.
I want the whole thing.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I was watching the whole thing, and I was jumping up and down. I mean, the well, race won for sure. Oh, man. And it was great. But and it is, you know, I mean, this is a great opportunity for these guys. You know, these are 13, 14 year old kids, and the what they're getting to do of going to the different tracks and being exposed to the limelight and the media, I think is as much as the on track learning experience that they're getting, the having to become accustomed to traveling and having to deal with the media and stuff. I think is as good of experience for them. As what they're learning on the track with Kevin Schwantz.
Yeah, that's for the American kids. And I agree. It also, it should point out, though, to some degree, it's a hardship for the parents because the financial support is kind of difficult. I mean, especially as an example, prior to having the American Rookie Cup, you had these folks, you know, getting chosen and then having to figure out how to get all the money together to send them over to Europe. And you could argue that, okay, well, this is what you wanted to do. Well, welcome to the really deep part of the pool. But at the same time, it is kind of tough. But kudos to those people who have taken advantage of it. I believe it was last year that PJ Jacobson, PJ Jacobson was in the Red Bull Rookies Cup. And we've got Cameron Beaubier, a U.S. rider that's now in the MotoGP Academy. But PJ Jacobson just got picked up, I read today, by the Aspar squad, the 125 squad, and will also be racing at Indy. So you got a whole bunch of folks cool. coming up.
As a wild card?
Good, good.
No, he's actually, I believe he got picked up by the team. So you've got Bonfield and you've got Jacobson, which is awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah. That is very, very cool. So yeah, a lot of big stuff happening. We've got the Saturday mile, which I'd like to go to, although I don't know about – Jim, do you have a ticket for that yet?
I do. I have a ticket for myself and for right. Budman, the gentleman that runs Barf. And just a hint for people that are getting tickets, if you can, and I believe you can still get them through Ticketmaster. I was told by kind of my inside contact, if you will, a gentleman, I'll even give his name, Alan Seymour. He's been around racing for an awful long time, knows a bunch of people at FIM and whatnot, and has been to like 50 dirt track events, flat or 1 miles, including the Indy Mile in the past. Is that if you're going to get tickets at least row 20 or higher. That way you can see the entire track. The tickets that I have are in row 20. I believe mine are on row 20 in like section 2. So you want to be able to see the whole thing. And he also said get there early because you start off with a pretty good-sized dirt cushion, and the spray is from the cushion is incredible. I myself in the past have actually been to a couple of miles. I went to the San Jose Mile and the Sacramento Mile back in the early 90s, and I've seen it, and it's really cool. There is also word that there's a decent possibility that Kenny Sr. will bring out the rather infamous TZ250 engine, or I'm sorry, TZ750 engine bike that he won the 75 mile in. That's the 3-cylinder, 2-stroke TZ750 that he also very successfully road raced with. And that was the bike that at the end of the race, or, and this is paraphrased because apparently it's not exact, but he said something like, you know, they don't pay me enough to ride that thing.
Interesting.
Is he going to ride it?
Apparently he's going to do a couple of laps. That is the whisper. I don't know if it's true, but if you ever have heard a TZ750, they are, and you know, Kenny Sr.'s got, you know, he might be out there with a glass of Merlot and a cigar, but he's still going to rip one open.
Oh yeah. Nice.
I know.
Yes. So we'll have to figure that one out, to get over there. So, and that's on Saturday night. So yeah, it's going to be a great weekend. We've got, you know, some stuff going on. We're going to be hanging out with Liam a little bit. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Speaking of Liam, and this is something, Bob, I don't know if you've seen this or Jules, you've seen it either, but, TV Moto has put together a, kind of a Moto Liam promo, video, that's actually pretty cool. And they
you posted on his the Liam's Wild thread.
Yeah, okay. And Bob will give you the URL for that. It's currently on YouTube, and if you look for TV Moto on YouTube, you'll find it. And apparently, there's a good high res version that's coming out pretty soon. But to give you a little bit more insight into what Liam does.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. We'll put that button on the show notes and everything else because. It's always fun to catch up with Liam and find out exactly what the hell is he doing.
Exactly. But, so the one thing that I've noticed this weekend that I have a feeling is that the schedule, our schedule, knowing that we're like kind of track fanatics, is going to be extremely busy. Between all four classes, including the rookies, the on-track time is going to be pretty incredible. You know, normally in the States you've got the AMA races that go along with the GP at Laguna, but you've got all these classes. The only people that have time on this track, you got to remember, is that are going to be racing is Spies, Nicky Hayden, who's got his
briefly,
yeah, kind of a world superbike spec bike, although hella trick. That was a nice bike. And then all the American rookies. And so the thing is that everybody is going to be trying to get up to speed. And frankly, watching free practice on Friday should be very interesting. I mean,
it should be. Yeah. Now, are they getting an extra hour?
They're getting, I believe, an extra hour. I was reading yesterday that they had just installed the curbing for the place, and something about the curbing being aluminum, which I thought was very strange. I have seen a few pictures.
The rumble strip?
The rumble strips, indeed, they're aluminum, and I read it on Road Racing World, I believe. And
hope it doesn't rain.
Yeah, well, and we'll talk about weather shortly. And but the word was that they probably didn't have a whole lot of traction. But I've got faith in the people at Indy that if you know, they're a very professional, hardcore, long-term organization. They don't screw around when it comes to providing the proper atmosphere for the racers, They've had some great innovations over the years in safety and whatnot. So I think they're going to absolutely do the right thing. And if, you know, you find those rumble strips are slippery, or some of the paint lines are a little slippy, or there is some strange transitions, which everybody was complaining about back in when the tire tests were being done, that I for one think it'll probably be taken care of.
I tend to agree. And as far as also as far as the fan experience, this was pointed out to me, and I mentioned it before. These guys have been doing it for 100 years. They know how to put on a show, and I think that they're also going to be very conscious of the safety issues and all of that. They've gone to fairly extensive lengths to alter the track for MotoGP and all of that. And other than the fact that it's going to be pretty much dead flat, I think the course looks pretty interesting.
It does. It does. And it does have that one banking, which is pretty severe. Well, it's not severe, but it's. I think a lot of riders are going to be like, "Whoa!"
Right, right. But it's still not an elevation change like a hill. That's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah. But
it's actually you look at like Misano and Motegi. Motegi has some hills, but it's really like it's got an uphill and a downhill. But it's
Motegi, yeah, actually. Motegi is a bridge, too.
It's fairly flat, and, you know, Misano is completely flat. You can still have good racing on a flat track.
Sure, I know. That's just true. It's just that, you know, to me, always, the best road courses are the ones where it's natural, like Donington, you know? It's
and sort Laguna. Of, Laguna, yeah, Brno, yeah. Brno. I mean, like, if Brno was a flat track, that would be a horrible track.
Yeah, right, exactly, because, I mean... Yeah, the only interesting thing would be the big old Omega curve, with the hills, it makes it very, very interesting track, and it shows off some of the differences of the bikes, and like they described it during the races, you know, the world's biggest dyno, you know, and that sort of a thing. And
that's true.
Yeah. So, but no, it's going to be a good show. I'm really looking forward to it, to going, you know, as much as anything for the Indy experience, to be honest with you.
I was just going to say, I think the thing I'm actually looking forward to the most, other than the racing, because we haven't seen the 125s and 250s in the States since, you know, like Jim said, 1994. And I've never seen them, so that's going to be amazing. But the other thing I'm looking forward to is just seeing 150,000 people watching a motorcycle race. I've never seen that.
And I'm going to say, thank God that I don't have to drive home after that in this crowd. 150,000 cars.
Yeah, I was kind of having a discussion about somebody with somebody last night online about attendance figures and they were speculating that the attendance figures would not be as high for Indy as they would be for Laguna Seca. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I mean, the place can comfortably hold 250,000 people, I think, or even maybe even more within its boundaries and in its grandstands. If there's anything, it might seem like it's less attended simply because there's more elbow room. But of course, those areas that aren't being utilized for fan viewing are going to be blocked off. I think the place is going to rock. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't look at last year at Laguna Seca it was something like 150,000 for total for the weekend.
For the weekend, yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw easily 300,000. And it looks like ticket sales have been brisk. And on top of that, what I'm seeing is much higher European interest in it, simply because it is Indy.
And that's people I've heard of, definitely.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not like Laguna Seca is unknown. It's got its own myth.
Well, this place has got mystique with Formula One. People know it from Formula One. It's much better known than Laguna Seca.
I wouldn't say better. I would just say it has more cachet.
Okay. Very good.
It's also closer to some population centers and all of that. I mean, San Francisco is relatively close to Laguna Seca, but at Indy, you're America close to a lot of stuff. Right. So, you know, people could combine the vacation with a trip to, you know, I don't know, you know, Chicago. Not that I'm 100% sure why people would want to go to Chicago, and New York and all that sort of thing, you know, with like another small plane ride.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you essentially can get fans from 360 degrees around, whereas Laguna Seca, you're pretty much limited to 180 degrees if you're talking about drive-ins.
Yeah,
pretty much. So, but yeah, it's really going to be good stuff. I'll be interested to see. And I'm now got to bring back Formula One. I'm really curious about what their attendance figures were for the last couple of races there, but they had that whole tire debacle. So, and we're not going to go down that road. Sorry, Jim, I didn't want to put you to sleep or anything, you know, talking about racing.
Yeah, but, I actually found that tire debacle kind of interesting. I'm like, what the hell?
That was one of those fun races. Sorry, that wasn't.
Well, it was just.
It was definitely interesting. I think interesting is an excellent way to put it.
All right. Okay. So motorcycles.
Them darn two wheel. There's way too much passing in motorcycle racing, by the way.
Yes, these days.
Yes.
What else is going on? I'm not sure. I'm staying through Monday, which actually gives me some additional time. One of the things that I've always wanted to do, and I've never been able to do at a GP. Was actually be able to take advantage of Sunday night's festivities, of which there are a lot, and they're not always necessarily publicly announced or whatever, but I have been hearing a few things, so we might have the opportunity to do that as well. And if that's the case, I'm kind of looking forward to a rager on Sunday night after the race.
That'd be cool. So you're flying back Monday, or are you staying and flying back Tuesday?
No, we're flying back to the Sacramento area Sunday. We leave at 4, and I think we get back here at 7. So plenty of time to bullshit and race and all that with a bunch of folks.
Yeah, I'm also staying. I'm leaving on Monday morning, so let's
yeah, do same here. And I'm still confused on the days for Jim. Are you leaving on Monday or Sunday?
Monday.
Monday. Okay. So good. Yeah. No, it'll be great. Cause same here. I fly out Monday morning and, so it's kind of the full on complete mega weekend and it's going to be good stuff. So,
predictions.
Really say again.
Predictions.
Oh boy.
Randy DePuy is going to crash first.
That's like cheating, dude.
I know, and that's rotten too. I shouldn't even do that. I don't even go down the road. It's just it's become so predictable.
Already did.
Okay, so let me give you a basis for predictions. A lot of people talk about the length of the front straight, and it's not the longest straight. I don't believe. I believe it's second to probably China, perhaps. But
how long is it?
It is long. In China, the track we're no longer going to visit, but. I think the bikes probably that have the best corner exit speed, not necessarily top speed, are going to be the ones to watch this weekend. So, and if I had to pick anybody, I would probably go just top three people on the box. The people that have good momentum right now might be Rossi, Stoner, Lorenzo. I'm feeling positive about him, except for Pedrosa is going to be on the air valve, and who knows what's going to happen with that. But I wouldn't put either of the full-time Suzukis off near the top. Seems like they've got things coming together right now, though I'd probably tip Caparossi closer.
At the risk of
pissing somebody off,
sounding like I'm not knowing what I'm talking about, this is three series of technical corners connected together with some straights. And I mean, so I think you're who's going to get good drive onto the straights. I think that's a good way to put it. But I think that the corners are going to be technical enough that you're going to want some flickability on that motorcycle.
And then Natch for the Yamaha.
Yeah, exactly. So basically agreeing with you.
And, I'll see Edwards, Lorenzo.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned Ben Spies, who has been on the track.
Top five.
I think he has to be in the top five, I think, for him to kind of warrant the attention he's been getting. He's kind of done with the AMA thing. He's won, basically, so... he can
through that full giant conspiracy theory that keeping the Australians down. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was the Australian thing. I think it was just the fact that he actually dared to speak out against them. But anyway,
okay, whatever it was.
But conspiracy theories aside, I think Ben Spies has to finish in the top five to kind of get himself a ride next year if he still wants a ride in MotoGP.
Warrant the attention, yeah.
And I actually think the Ducati is going to do better than I think that we're going to see at least one Ducati in the top five.
You know, that's interesting because one of the things that I was pondering today was if this role continues, I mean, obviously, Elias has been a shocker with two races in a row with excellent results. And you look at that and you're like, you know, wow, amazing and incredible work by both him and Team Lecce. Last race he finished in front of, two races in a row he finished in front of the Factor Corsa rider, not necessarily his fault or obviously not Elias's fault, but you can't go on for too much like that in traditional history of the past without not necessarily getting a talking to, but you guys kind of know what I'm getting at, don't you?
Well, I mean, we know what happened with after Barros got on podium in Mugello, but I mean, he was ahead of Stoner because Stoner crashed. I mean, if Stoner stays up, I think he's going to be finish ahead of Elias. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that he'll finish in front of Elias.
I agree.
Right. Jules, when you said a Ducati in the top five, do you mean besides Stoner or including Stoner?
I'm saying Stoner and Elias.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. So, yeah, I agree. I don't think that's going too far out on a limb either.
I think we're going to see Rossi. Yeah, I think Rossi might do well, yeah. Lorenzo, I think we'll see Stoner and Elias in the top five. Those four guys.
I think that's fair. And then I think that if you had another gamble on top five, I think Spies, just because I think Spies knows, like you're saying, that he needs to get a top five, and I think he's capable of it.
But needing to get a top five and
getting a top five,
riding a relatively still unfamiliar bike to him, which means pushing beyond limits that you're comfortable with, is fraught with worry. And regardless of how many laps he had at the tire tests that he did back in July, the pace that you run at those tests is not the same kind of pace that you're looking at. I think they were running 143s. And I have to point this out, one thing that we haven't mentioned at all. In fact, this is a great topic to actually talk about, worm our way into it. Let me finish my Spies thought, is that I could very well imagine that we're looking at sub-40s for lap times here. So he's got another 3 seconds to pick up. My lead-in to discuss there, though, was obviously the Suzuki team is on Bridgestones. Suzuki, as we know, basically locked up Caparossi and Vermeulen, so there really isn't any existing spot on a team for him for next year because both those guys are locked in, and as far as we know, there's no additional Suzuki forthcoming. But Michelin... wisely, intelligently, congratulations, Michelin, without going down a tire road that we've been going down quite a bit, spent the last two weekends, they spent the entire Labor Day weekend, Labor Day in the United States, three-day weekend for us Yanks.
Beginning of September.
Yeah, as well as I listened to the last podcast, and you guys were talking about explaining yourselves. I'm like, that's a very good point because it's too inside. As well as 2 days this week, doing tire testing, 5 days and essentially 5 full days of testing in essentially about 10 days. That's the kind of thing that they need to do to turn their fortunes around.
Oh, yeah.
So watch out for the Michelins. Don't discount them this year.
No. I think that while I said that, you know, Spies kind of has to be in top five, I don't think he is. And I think that Pedrosa is going to be a dark horse, and I think Pedrosa could very well be a huge surprise.
On those Bridgestones.
On the Bridgestones. Well, I mean, just in general, I think Pedrosa can be a surprise at these kind of tracks. Remember,
But Pedrosa's,
he did well.
Yeah. He's got gobs of talent. We know that. Now, one thing I'm going to throw out there is the weather. We saw the weather forecast. It's likely to be a little damp.
You know, I talked to the missus about that, who is from Ohio, and talked to a couple of people online, and apparently this is really sounding like way West Coast here, but apparently this is a normal phenomenon. I have seen it before in my travels, that you get thunderstorms running through in the afternoon, and they dump quick and are usually gone. Now, if that happens in the middle, if that happens in the middle of the of any of the races, for example, it's declared a dry race, you're going to have pits with people swapping bikes out. That's something I know none of us likes to see. We prefer either a full wet or whatever start. So we'll have to see how that goes. But normally they're brief. The weather itself is actually relatively cool, and the humidity not that high, which will probably be a change for a bunch of the riders.
Can't they just close the big roof?
Yeah, the giant roof. And I mean, so in Indianapolis, I mean, I know like in Florida and Mississippi and stuff, they tend to get that sort of 4 o'clock rain shower thing where it's late afternoon. And so, I mean, if we're seeing that, yeah, that's not going to be so much of a factor. But if it's a 3 o'clock rain shower, like you say, Jim, that it might be a factor, especially with that banking.
I think, well, I wouldn't get hung up on that banking. The section of track that they're actually using is relatively short.
In the rain.
Yeah. If anything, that you're looking at issues with the rain would probably be the turn that exits onto the front straight, whatever 15 or something like that. And that's one that, to a man, almost every rider has said they've heard about and think that there might be issues. And then back to what we were talking, if that's what they're all saying, then Indy's going to have done something about it, whether it be a, you know, 6 foot deep double layer of air fence or whatnot. But an unfamiliar track at race pace with variable weather is going to do nobody any good.
Right, right. And that's a reasonable assumption. So I'm hoping for a dry one anyways. I just think they're better that way.
So. It could be exciting. We might take it like – I'll take it like a half of FP3, little damp just first.
I'm going to be sitting outside in a grandstand. I want a dry race, Jim.
I'm sorry.
So let's – I need to wrap it up, guys.
Okay.
I've got to hit this battery is running out. Yeah, so it's going to be amazing. I think it's going to be very different than Laguna Seca as far as experience. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the kind of show that this track is so famous and putting on. And it's going to be great to see these guys racing on a track that none of them raced on before.
I agree. It's going to be good stuff. And I hope that this show, we're going to put this show up a little earlier than normal and everything. And I hope that a lot of you out there that are going to Indy can hear the show first half, or at least check the website, check right onto whatever it is to get these links. And, you know, so that we can say hello and all of that sort of a thing. Because, you know, as usual, I didn't put enough planning into sort of doing this last week. But yeah, it is. It's going to be quite an experience, and that's what I'm looking for, is the overall experience. My third MotoGP venue, just to sort of compare and contrast it to Donington and Laguna Seca and everything, I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah, that's key for me too. It's been interesting. You know, you guys have attended a couple of GPs together. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to hook up there. The three of us did Sears Point, and in both cases, Jules and I had a fair amount of prior experience with the track myself, with GPs going way back to the 80s. One of the things that I think is cool is I know this is going to happen. It's like preja vu or something. I know all three of us are going to walk in there and our jaw is going to drop. We're going to go, holy cow, you know.
From the sheer size of it, yeah.
Yeah. A little aside, a cute little story. I can do this in 10 seconds or less. In 1963, my mom was on the dating game. And she was the picker, if you will. And the prize for that was a trip to the Indy 500. I think it was 63 or 64. And she went to that, and she came home and raved about it. And it's kind of, for me, a little bit of a fulfilling thing going back to where she had been in the past. So,
so I have to ask, was that before or after you were born? Sorry.
No, that's terrifying.
I think like Tom Selleck was on the dating game, wasn't he, Jim?
You know, I'll tell you a funny little aside. You're asking for it now. that she hated her date, and it was after I was born. She divorced my father at the time, who was anyway. And it was after the date. The date that won was a total jerk, and she ended up practically falling in love with a chaperone. They actually sent along a chaperone. But she actually pulled me and my brother out of school. I remember I was super young and took us to a TV store so that we could watch it in color TV.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that a cute little story?
Yeah, I love it.
Yes, that is.
But I have a feeling that you're the chaperone's son.
I especially like that we went to the TV store to watch it in color part. Jeez, Jim.
Am I the grandfather in this trio?
Apparently.
I don't think so. I don't know. Are you? You've got gray hair.
I've had gray hair since I was 20.
Yeah. Wicked. I want that kind of gray hair, man.
You're the one that made the crack about the chaperone, aren't you, kiddo?
I'm getting a beating. I know it. I'm going to get a beating.
You're trapped in one town with me and Bob. You're in big trouble.
All right, guys.
Thank you. Good call. Talk to you guys later.
All right. Take care, and we'll see everybody at Indy.
Cool.
Right on. All right, that's going to do it for that call. I hope you had fun listening to it. I know I had fun making it. I talked to Jules the following day, and I kind of said, you know, the call was a little bit all over the map, but I had a good time. It was fun to talk to those guys, and hopefully you guys got something out of it and enjoyed the call as well. Like I said, we're going to come back next week with a sort of more informative and newsworthy-ish show with our post-Indy wrap-up. So we're looking forward to a good race, maybe some, you know, sort of news of what's going on with the championship, all that kind of stuff. And we will, of course, let you know on that. Like I said, there was in the call, we mentioned several links, and those are all up on the MotoGPOD website, which if you happen to catch it a few days ago, you'll notice there was a disaster for a couple of days. My hosting company made some changes, and that caused a major meltdown. Luckily, I was able to get a hold of Simon Roberts, who's been so helpful in working that website for me and everything, and he managed to help me out because the solutions I tried weren't working. So Simon helped me out and fixed that website right up and got it going. I think it runs a little bit faster than it did. So it's all back online, and those links are all there. And let's see. Like we said in the call, we're going to have a little meet and greet at Indy. So if you are going to Indy and you happen to hear this show before you leave, we hope to see you there Saturday, lunchtime, 12:15 range, at the Media Center on the corner of, Myers Street and 6th Street or something like that. There's an Indy track map up on the RideOn2.com forum, and we'll put links to that in the show notes. Everything else, you'll be able to find it. It's the Media Center somewhere in that general area. I'll be the guy wearing a MotoGPOD t-shirt, and I'll tell you what, I'll wear my desert camouflage shorts on that day as well, so you can't miss me. Sunglasses, MotoGPOD t-shirt, and desert camouflage shorts. So, let's see. I guess that's about it. We'll talk to you again next week after Indy with that post-Indy wrap-up, and hopefully we'll see you there at Indy, and if not, watch us on TV. Don't forget it's on NBC this week, not here in the United States. Of course, you know, for all of you international listeners, you're going to see it on all your usual outlets, but here in the United States, not on Speed, it is on NBC, so make sure you check your listings on Sunday for what time it shows up in your time zone and all of that stuff looking on NBC, and we will talk to you again next week. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.